You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Kelly Morgan. We chat about her journey in writing her book, Wait For It, which sounds like it might be a memoir, but it's not. It's a novel. And for Kelly, the act of writing this became a form of self-therapy, which is a very interesting story. Along the way, we get into the messiness of self-care routines like daily affirmations. We chat about the complexities of growing up with body image struggles and even some behind the scenes truths about publishing your own book. We share some laughs about raisins, heartfelt moments about teachers who made a difference, and reflections on building your own table when the world tells you no. I am really pretty sure you're going to love this. So let's get to it. Kelly Morgan, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am ready. Let's do it.
I love that. All right. I start all of my interviews by asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So where are you today?
I am in Aurora, Colorado.
I love that. I love that. So give me some perspective. Give me like where that is on the map. How? Where are you in relation to like Boulder and Denver?
So I am southeast of Denver.
Okay.
So to get to Boulder, I have to go through Denver to get to Boulder.
I know where Aurora is. Thank you very much for that. Okay. So in a second, we're going to start the official interview, which is not about my lack of awareness of the map of Colorado, but I want to ask one more warm-up question, which is, can you share with us something that you do to take care of yourself, something that you or someone else would consider self-care?
Yes. One thing that stands out is I meditate. I meditate daily, and I also record my own affirmations in my own voice, and I listen to them every morning.
I love that. So do you do that just like in a voice app on your phone, the
affirmation? I just have a little voice app on my phone, and when I think of an affirmation, I'll just record it over and over, usually 2 minutes. So I'll say like, I am successful, or I am enough, or whatever that affirmation, whatever comes to my head, and I'll record it, and then I'll just play them. And so I started off with one. And this morning when I was looking, I have like maybe 15, anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes. And I just play them when I wake up in the morning. Usually takes me about an hour to get through them, but they're all in my own voice. And it has been a game changer for me.
Well, I've met over the years, many, many people have given me a version of that bit of, you know, how important affirmations can be. And I've heard the thing about record it and play it back in your own voice. I'm not as good at it as many people are. It's a place where I could buckle down. The most aggro advice I ever got for this, which I tried for a while, was a person, she's been a guest on this podcast, Sherry Danzig. She told me she sets an alarm every hour and so on and so forth, and it pops up to remind her to do it. So like however many hours she's awake, she is going back through that every few hours. And I did try that, but I was like, I have my phone on Do Not Disturb most of the time because of the public facing version of what I do with the podcast and the recording and the training. And so I didn't get the alerts. I just would come back to my phone and realize that I'd missed 4 reminders or something. And I was like, well, I'm not sure this is working exactly how it was intended.
Right.
But I think that's a spectacular bit of advice, and I appreciate you sharing it with us. So to get to the topic of the day, we're going to talk about you writing a book as a form of self-help, which I think is really interesting. Specifically, to use your words, you say that writing the book forced you to confront the deeper issues behind your obsession and finally make peace with the woman you are. And so my first question is, share with us a little bit about what is the theme or focus of this book you've written.
So the book is called Wait For It, and it's a play on words. So it's W-E-I-G-H-T. So wait, like your weight. And this was like right after COVID. And so, you know, during COVID, we all ate our feelings. I know I did. We didn't, you know, we weren't leaving the house, but we were short eating. So I had always been somebody that has always gone back and forth with their weight, right? Where I lose weight, then I gain weight. And then you always gain more than you lost. And then you get on this roller coaster. It's very hard to get off. And I was also somebody that had just gone fanatical with weight loss. I had tried every little weight loss trend, or if it was something new to lose weight, if it promised a quick fix, take this pill, drink this liquid, do this exercise, whatever, I was going to try it. And I would spend the money, but I would never do them. I would never follow through. I was never consistent because I knew that they probably wouldn't work anyway. But it was just a weird obsession I had with weight loss and just my whole body image and what people tell you should look like and all this stuff. And it just one day it just culminated where I was now eating my feelings again, but now I'm gaining weight. I've probably ballooned about 275. And I'm depressed, but I'm depressed and eating at the same time. So nothing's happening, right? I know what I need to do, but I just don't have the motivation to do any of it because every time I lose weight, I would self-sabotage myself. And it's weird because I would say, okay, Kelly, you've lost this 40 pounds, but can you maintain it? And that voice in my head would be like, hell no, you can't maintain this. You might as well just go ahead and eat, right? Just save yourself the aggravation of trying to maintain it and just eat. And I would self-sabotage. And so this is the roller coaster I was on until one day it just came to a head for me. And I've always been somebody who has always written through their pain, right? I'm a poet, and all my poems are just so dark and woe is me. And that's when I write poetry. But instead of poetry this time, I started writing this book. And it just didn't start off to be a book. I just started writing. And before I knew it, I just saw this character kind of play out in my head because when I do write, it plays out in my head like a movie. And so now I'm just writing to keep up with what's happening, but the things that are happening to her happened to me. But it wasn't me that I was seeing in my head. It wasn't me in the story, but it was me. It was almost like I could distance myself from this person and look at their story and be like, man, this woman's got issues with weight loss, and she's very fanatical in her skills talking to her. But writing this, I realized that all of these things are me. All of these things that happened to this woman in this book are me. And I didn't realize it until I got to the very end of the book, and somebody said, I let my friend read it. I'm like, just read this. No, I read it to my daughter. I said, just listen to this. And I read it to her, and she's like, the character doesn't have a name. And I was like, wow, huh. She doesn't have a name. You want to know why she doesn't have a name? Because it could literally be anybody. I feel like nobody talks about the messiness of weight loss, the fanatical part of weight loss, the part that they don't show you. What happens during the weight loss process, not the before, not the after, but that messy middle. And for me, the scale would literally talk to me, and the chatter that it was giving to me was not good. So in the book, the scale talks to her, but the reader has to decide if is that her or is that the scale?
So this
And
is, you wrote this as a novel, actually, not a
it didn't start
memoir.
off that way. It was just me writing, right? It was just simply me writing a story, just me, because that's what I do when I'm depressed. I write. It's just an outlet for me. TV's not going to cut it for me. Music can only take me so far. I write. And so it was just started off as just me writing. And then the next I know, it kind of poured out of me like a story. And the next I know, I have this like story. I'm like, huh, this is like a book. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to publish this and I'm not going to give her a name. And this is my story through fiction that maybe somebody could relate to, because I can't be alone in all of these weight loss feelings. I can't be the only one crying in my closet. I can't be the only one that hears the scale when I step on it. Maybe this will help somebody else, knowing that they're not alone in this journey. It's okay to be fanatical as long as you can pull out of it when you recognize it. It's okay to almost self-sabotage yourself, knowing that you've got to learn to give yourself grace. So all of these things that happened were lessons. I just didn't know they were lessons until I started writing them down
All
and
right, so
reading
let's.
them. I removed myself from the situation so I could look at it.
I love that. Let's back up a teeny tiny bit and put some time frame on this. So you started writing the book in after lockdown.
Yes.
So
So
2021.
shortly after COVID, probably 2020.
2020 sometime. All right, very good. There's a crazy statistic when it comes to women and weight loss that a lot of women in America actually try their first restrictive food routine, a diet, a regime as early as 9 years old. And so my question for you is, how early do you think you remember this part of yourself where you were aware of the amount of space your body took up, you were aware of the number on the scale that was playing a factor into your self-talk? Like, how old were you when you remember starting to think about these
Oh, I
things?
remember because it was middle school. It
All
wasn't
right.
elementary school. It was middle school because my friends were starting to get boyfriends.
Yeah.
Friends were starting to care about the clothes that they wore.
Yep.
All of a sudden, everybody's into the size. Where when you're in middle school, you don't care, you know? But I remember getting like husky clothes
Oh, that's,
and
I don't know if they still call it that, but that is exactly what the clothes, I've talked to many friends who
yes, and
were,
I
have
remember like
deep
the numbers being
wounds.
like a size 14 with an H next to it, meaning
Yeah.
husky or heavy or whatever. I remember this, but I think for me when body image became an issue was middle school, was
Yeah.
seventh and eighth grade.
So yeah, developmentally for kids, that is exactly when we become aware that other people are looking at us. And so there's a lot of layers to that. It's the first time in our life where we begin to style our hair. Hopefully we become aware of body odor. That one sometimes takes a little longer. Anybody who's lived through raising middle schoolers knows that can be tough. But yeah, so that tracks in terms of my knowledge of how people age. And I think that's a significant thing for people to be aware of for sure. All right, so very good. So a lot of people write books. Or want to write books. A lot of people want to write books. If you survey adults, it's something ridiculous, like 8 out of 10 adults say they want to write a book. Most don't actually do it. So you wrote already as a part of how you process the things that were happening in your life. Was that like a daily journaling habit, or how did you work this into your day at the beginning? Because you shared with us already that it was at the end when you realized you were like, oh, this is a manuscript.
Well, I'm always a writer, so I always write. I maybe don't write consistently, but I write all the time. And it may not be long. It could just be something short, right?
Okay.
But I always write, and I love movies. I love stories.
Okay.
So I may not write the story, but I always have a story in my head. It's like when I watch a movie, I'm trying to figure out like where was the writer going with this? Like where are they going to go now? And 9 times out of 10, I can figure it out because I'm like, this is what I would have wrote. So my brain works differently than other people where I don't have to write consistently, but I'm always writing in the ether, I guess I want to say. I'm always thinking about writing, but maybe not actually doing. So I
Okay.
have a ton of stories in my head. But one day my brain will say, okay, it's time to put this one on paper, and then I'll start to write it. I
And
just.
where did the connection for you come in writing as a processing tool?
I guess when I just really started writing poetry, right? Bad poetry at that. But going back and reading it, it helped me, you know, like being able just to write through your pain, especially like when you're a teenager. I've got some poems I wrote when I was in high school that are just horrible, right? You're like, oh my God. But I can remember those moments, that writing helping me get through whatever I needed to get through.
Okay.
Because sometimes the things that we have to do, the hardest things we have to do is admit things to ourselves.
Yeah.
And writing it down for me is a way that I can say it without necessarily saying it out loud yet.
Yeah, it's
I can
private. It
read
can be
it,
private.
right?
It
It's
can be.
private. I can read it. And then when I'm ready, I can say it out loud. And then I can honestly maybe let somebody else read it. For a long time, I would write and then never let anybody read my stuff because I was afraid of what they would say. So I would
Well,
write and then I would just
yeah,
never show it to anybody.
I respect that because, and actually, that was the next thing that I was going to talk to you about. Because, in my personal experience, there's a very big difference between writing out a personally inspired story, whether it's an email or an essay or a book, and then letting somebody else read it and tell you what they think about it. Especially, so this is written as a novel, but it's personally inspired. It's connected to your actual experience. So I'm curious what, when you realized this was a manuscript and you began to make the decision of you were going to publish this book, what were your original hopes and thoughts and fears about showing this to other people and letting them read it? Like, what did you hope would happen? And also, what were you fearful of?
My hope was that somebody else could relate, right? My hope was that I wasn't out here alone with my talking skill and my fanatical weight loss antics, right? That was my
Yeah.
hope, that somebody else could be like, you know what, Kelly, I feel you, I see you, I can relate to you, I get it. That was my hope. Publishing it was a little scarier because I'm now opening myself to criticism. Good, bad, or
Yes.
indifferent, right? I am now open myself to criticism. But I have learned in my journey that there is power in my story. So because it sits so close to me, I feel like I feel like the criticism doesn't matter because this was my breakthrough moment. If you don't like the story, it's okay not to like the story, right? I'm
Yeah.
not going to be everybody's cup of tea. There's books, stories I don't like, so I get it. But it took me a long time to come to that, right? Again, that I got through that through meditation and writing. And
Yeah.
just one day just saying, you know what, if I'm going to be this quote unquote author, like you've had this dream of being this Stephen King, Anne Rice, you know, book tour, Oprah, big seller, you know, author, if this is ever going to happen, you got to at least be willing to put one book out there, Kelly. At least one.
Yeah, no, I think that that's very good. I'm trying to think of who I'm gonna share a bit of writing advice that I got, and at the moment I'm completely spacing who gave it to me, but it's somebody with Hay House, the publisher, and they said, they were like, one of the things is this first manuscript may never make it out of the drawer next to your desk or next to your bed, but you have to write that one to get to the next one that you're going to actually show to somebody. And because writing a novel, writing an essay, writing any of those things, there's skill that goes into it. And the first one, we don't start as experts. Anne Rice did not. Well, actually, I don't, this could be false. I don't think that her first book was Interview with a Vampire, right? I think she probably wrote some other things that were really, really good. So it takes some time to get that skill. And I think I agree with you. I think, first of all, I think that you were very smart to say that to yourself and coach yourself through that. And I also think that it is a thing that stops a lot of people. It's like, you know, I can only do this if I am going to be on the New York Times bestseller list. And we'd all love to be there, but very few of us knock it out of the park on the very first time. So,
It
yeah.
was something that I had always nagged at me. And this was not my first attempt to publish a book. This was actually my second attempt. My
Okay, so yeah.
first attempt was my first manuscript I published. Now, my first book was somebody always told me, write what you know,
Yep.
right? But I'm not a nonfiction writer. So I'm not a self-help writer. I'm a fiction writer. I love stories. But how do I write about what I know and make it fiction? So I wrote a book called You Sound White. And the reason why I wrote You Sound White is I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. And that's what I've been told my entire career in the corporate world. People talk to me on the phone, automatically assume I'm blonde, blue-eyed, and that I'm this white woman, and I'm not. And then people would say literally to me, man, you sound white. You speak so well. And that's not a compliment. I'm
I
here to
was going to
tell
say,
you,
I was like,
not a
this is
compliment.
a master course in
Right.
microaggression. Like, send how to be routed directly to HR. Like,
Not a compliment.
back.
Or people would say, you articulate so well. So I wrote a story called You Sound White. Now it's fiction. It has
Okay.
nothing to do with me, but the things that happened to the character did happen to me growing up in mostly a all white school. When I was in elementary school, it was just me and my sister were the only two people of color in the entire elementary school. I mean, I grew up in Utah, not a
Yeah,
lot of people.
Utah is a beautiful state, but
Beautiful,
does
clean,
not have a
but
ton of
yeah,
diversity.
not a lot of diversity.
Yeah.
So I wrote that. And when I wrote that book, I just knew. I'm like, oh my, I wrote it. I, you know, did what I thought. I was very naive to the publishing industry at this time. So I wrote it, not really knowing. I just figured you write it, somebody's going to read it and be like, great, let's publish you. Does not work that way. I started to pitch it and got a lot of no's. And then I got this one yes from this little, tiny little publisher that turned out to be a total scam. Long story short, this guy scammed me for $700 and took the rights to my book,
Ooh.
right? He took it. The company's no longer around, but he took, he you know, I didn't know anything. So
Yeah.
you're gassing me up with all this praise and telling me what a great writer I am and telling me all these things that we're going to do to promote the book. And I believe you, but then I have to make an investment too as an author. And so I do, but I never saw anything for my investment. And it took me a very long time to get my book back. And when I finally did, I was devastated. So I just didn't do anything. I'm like, I'm just writing stuff is for the birds. I don't even want to do this anymore. This guy dashed my dreams. He just killed everything for me. And I'm the person that once I get burned, I'm just kind of done with it, right? But in the back of my head, it's like, ah, but don't you want to be this author? You published this book, you got it back. What are you going to do with it? And for a long time, I didn't do anything. And then I decided that I was going to self-publish, all right? Because I'm tired of people telling me no. And one day, a little voice, when I was meditating, a voice came to me and said, you know what? It's time for you to build your own table.
Oh, nice.
And I was
Okay.
like, okay. And so I did. And so I started Bright Headed Publishing.
Okay.
And I published my book, You Sound White. And I did that for a long time. And then a little voice said, you know what? It's time for you to start helping others. So I started a podcast called BHP Patio Book Club. And I would literally interview other authors and help them promote their book. But then that's all I did,
Yeah.
right? That's
Right.
all I did. I mean, having a podcast became like a full-time gig, and I've got authors coming out of the yin yang, and everybody wants to promote their book, and I want to help everybody. So I don't want to tell anybody no.
Right.
And I'm so entrenched to this that there's nothing left for Kelly.
Yeah.
So I stop again. COVID hits, depression, eating, wait for it. But after I wrote Wait For It, I was like, what are you going to do with it, Kelly? Because if you publish it, you're going to have to bring back Bright Headed Publishing. And if you bring back Bright Headed Publishing, you can't stop this time, right? You got to
Okay.
do this. You got to do this. Because I, mind you, I've been meditating this whole time. I've been working out after I wrote the book. I made a lifestyle change because one day I went to the doctor and they're like, ha, yeah, you're so unhealthy. Take this drug and this drug and this drug and this drug. And I'm like, absolutely not. That was my wake-up call. It wasn't about being cute in a selfie. It wasn't about putting on that size 10 dress. It was about literally my health and seeing my grandchildren grow up. I
Yeah.
still want to be around. So what are you going to do about it? So instead of making a weight loss decision, I made a life-changing decision and decided to change my life habits. And that I was going to be in this for the long game, which was
Yeah.
not easy, right? Because these are
No,
all
it's not.
things that I'm going through, and this is, didn't happen overnight. These are baby steps, and I'm telling myself this. So
Yeah.
one day it's you're going to start working out, and one day I just started walking, right? Not to work out, but to clear my head. Because what am I going to do with this book? What am I going to do with this publishing company? What are you going to do? And so I started walking to clear my head, and that became walking 3 miles. Now we're walking 5 miles. Now you're losing weight, right? And you're not
Yeah.
really trying. You're eating better and you're feeling better. So I told myself that I was going to relaunch Bright Headed Publishing, but this time I was going to have a goal and a mission, and I was going to do it right. And I was going to still open up the platform, and I was still going to help other people, but I was also going to set boundaries, and I was going to help me too, right?
Beautiful.
And so
Beautiful.
that is where I am today. So really, all of this has been happening. Now, You Sound White, or Wait For It, was published in 2021, but I didn't do anything with it. It sat on Amazon, unmarketed. It just sat there for like 3 years because I wanted to do an audiobook before I really went out there and did it. But I didn't know how to do an audiobook, right? I didn't know what to do. And then all of a sudden, boom, AI comes out.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, ooh, I'll use AI, but I didn't like the voices.
And
So,
so important with an audiobook, the
I didn't
voice.
like
So
any of the
important.
voices. I just didn't like it. So, I found a local studio here in Parker, a woman-owned studio, because all the men just were just not friendly with me. Like lots of studios, but a woman-owned who, like, you know, because somebody's going to have to listen to this book as I record it, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys just weren't interested. But she was. And so this woman helped me publish and helped me write the audiobook. And right after the audiobook, when I finished it, 2025 in February, I launched everything all over again. I rebranded,
Wow.
I relaunched, I put the audiobook, You Sound White's out there, Wait For It's out there. I have a mini podcast called The Author's Mic where I invite other authors to come on. It's like a 5-10 minute thing because I don't want to be overwhelmed, right? I'm trying to set
Right.
boundaries, but I still want to help others. So it's a platform where I give tips and tricks about writing, but I also open it up. So if you're an author or a creator, illustrator, whatever, if you're in this indie space, you can come on and you can promote yourself for 5 minutes. I will be quiet. The mic is yours. That's why it's called the author's mic. And then just recently, last week, I was trying to pitch book clubs, having a hard time. And again, the little voice said, "You know what, Kelly? It's time for you to build that table again." So I started a book club. It's called the Indie Reader Society. It's open to anybody who wants to read, but I'm also going to open it up to other authors as a way to get their books to book clubs. Obviously, we're going to start with my book, Wait For It, but
Yeah.
right after we're done, I'm going to open it up to other indie authors who maybe want to pitch a book club and don't really know how. Well, this book club would be for you. So my whole thing, Amy, is why I'm helping myself. I help myself most when I am helping others.
I love
That is
that.
just my nature. That's just who I am. But I still want to set boundaries and so I feel like as long as your message is authentic and it's real and it's yours, then it deserves to be heard. So my
I think so.
brand for Bright Headed is to help underrepresented voices get their words out there. Maybe you don't know how. Maybe you fall into a predatory publisher. Maybe somebody's taking you for a bunch of money. Maybe you don't have a lot of money, but you still want to get the book out there. There are things we can do to do this for almost nothing today
Yeah.
with that, but you have to know these things. And I don't want anybody to go through what I went through. Nobody needs to be in their closet crying on a Tuesday afternoon because some guy's got their book, right?
Right.
I
Yeah.
mean,
And people who have not gone through this that are reading may not. Well, I mean, you don't know the things you don't know. So, the publishing industry, everybody I think knows the book publishing industry has changed dramatically over the last 25 years. But you can easily self-publish for sure on Kindle for practically nothing. But there's also like hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of companies that are. That will help you self-publish for a fee, and then there are companies that will invite you to help you launch a book. But most new authors, I think, dramatically misunderstand or have no idea of how much self-promotion goes in these days. And I think that's some a story I hear from people over and over again. I want to get back to your story about the Wait For It book and your personal journey. But as you were telling the story of I Sound White or You Sound White, I forget the title exactly, I was thinking of, so there's a Jordan Peele movie and it's a horrible horror movie. It's a great movie, but it's a story, a very scary story. But they hire people with ethnic voices to work in a call center. And then there's this whole joke. It's like, well, put your white voice on. Put your white voice
Oh,
on.
I
And they
know
all
what
have
movie
that.
you're
Do you know what
talking
I'm
about, and
talking
I
about?
can't think of it. Yes, I
That's
want to
what
say
I
it's
was.
is it called Thank You for Listening or
That's what it
something
is.
like
That's what
that?
it, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching or whatever.
Yeah,
That
something like that.
when you were saying that scene or those several scenes, because it really is a well done story. That was what was going through my head. I was like, that is not an experience that I have had myself because I am Whitey McWhiterson. So it's like that doesn't happen to me. But it definitely it's obviously it's definitely a thing that happens to people all the time. And it happens, your experience is that, but it also apparently happens to people who have any other ethnicity, but maybe, you know,
Yes.
like maybe didn't grow
Yes.
up in that place and they go, oh wow, how come you don't, it's like where are you from? That's the other one. And they're like, New Jersey, why are you asking me? You know, like so, all right. So very good. So you've got this lifelong journey. And one of the things that fascinates me about this, truly fascinates me in this with a variety of the stories I tell, is that so many times people are going through this experience alone in their closet, just like you're saying, alone in their house, sad, feeling isolated, and just not aware of the fact that there are tons and tons of people out there who are going through something similar. And the desire to like find other people and feel validated that it is a shared experience, that you're not alone. Since you have done this and since you started talking about it, have you come into you have you heard that there are lots and lots of people who have a similar experience?
Not really yet.
Not
I've
really.
really started the marketing push, just because number one, it's like I'm solo, so what do I do,
Yes.
right? How do I market the book? And then how do I market so that it's not overwhelming, that it's not expensive?
Yeah.
And mind you, the whole time that I'm doing this, I am the guinea pig for anybody that ever wants to come to my platform and be published. Because once I
Yes.
publish you, we can publish you, yes. But what people don't realize, it is all in the marketing and promotion as an indie author.
Yes.
How do you find the readers for your book? Because just because you put it on Amazon doesn't mean anything.
Right. It's
Because
just
you put
there
it
with
on book, yeah,
millions
it's
and
just
millions of
there
books. Yeah.
with a bunch of other books. So what are you going to do to promote that book? And when I remember when I was doing the podcast, that was the one thing that everybody kind of fell short. I was like, I don't know what to do. So that is what I'm working on now. I'm really trying to put together an infrastructure. So if somebody did say, Kelly, help me publish my book, or I have my book, now what do I do? At least I can give you a marketing strategy that would
Yeah.
work. That would be very inexpensive for you as an indie author. That would help you in your journey to get your words out there and connect with people, because your words will resonate with somebody. I truly
Oh,
believe
I love
this.
that. So I do. I love that. I love that. Now I want to talk about the way writing this book, you say it forced you to confront the deeper issues behind your obsession. So what I think is really interesting about that, and I believe it 100% as you were going through it, because for someone who's in the self-help space and coaching space, I encourage people to journal. And one of the things I encourage people to do is try to become an observer of their own life, right? So, which is that shift. It's like instead of thinking about it, it's happening to you, it's like as if it was happening to somebody else. So when you were telling that story about, you were looking at it and you were able to look at it from the character, I was like, wow, that is the embodiment of this concept of the power of like trying to write it out. So were you aware of that as a tool when you were doing that, or did it just gobsmack you? You were
It
like, oh,
just
look at this.
happened. It just kind of I didn't go into this saying I'm gonna write this story so to help people. That helping somebody else at the time was not anything that I was concerned about. I was too busy wallowing, I'm writing and typing and eating at the same time, and then crying, and then typing some more, and then eating, and then crying, and then so it's all this cycle. So helping somebody was not my focus at all. My focus was just to simply write this story. And then as I started writing it, probably halfway through the book, as I would reading it back, I was like, this lady's kind of fanatical in her weight loss, and she's like removing people from her life that aren't with her game plan, and her scale is literally chattering with her, and she is, oh my God, this woman is me. And that's when I was like, wow, is this really me? And
Okay,
then
yeah.
as I kept writing the story, I was like, yeah, this is you. Not everything. There are some things that are just fictions. I'm like, it sounded better. But
Sure.
all the moments that happened throughout the book were real moments in my weight loss journey. The moment when she went horseback riding and realized that she's too heavy to get on a horse. Do you know what that feels like? Well, let
So
me tell you, it's a real thing.
I don't know exactly what it feels like, but my husband is a person who's like struggled with his weight all the for as long as I've known him. And years ago, we took a family vacation. We went to the Grand Canyon and we did a mule ride. And they had a there's a weight limit for the mules. And so this was a trip that was planned over several months and all of these things. And it wasn't until after we did it that he confessed that he had been thinking about that weight limit and stressed about it and modifying his behavior for all of the months. He'd never mentioned it to anybody else, but it was sort of like what you were talking about, like the scale was talking to him. I think that sometimes now they call it food noise or maybe weight noise in your head. And it was, and it, when he finally said, he's like, oh, thank goodness I made it and I was able to do it. But he had been worried about it for months,
Yeah, it's a real thing.
months.
And or when I remember when I was dating, and I actually, could if and the thing about dating when you're heavy, at least for me, is that you are probably going to date anybody who wants to date you, because you're figuring that you're not good enough to date anybody. So if anybody throws you any type of attention, you're going to glob onto it. At least I did. Not necessarily the healthiest thing. But I remember the guy that I was dating, I remember I was eating in bed, and I'll never forget this. I still hear these words to this day. He told me, Eating in bed is that's what fat girls do. Fat girls eat in bed, right? And I just that those words just hung in the air. And I remember putting it in the book. And I remember after I read it, I was like, man, God, those words still sting because that was a fat girl thing. Fat girls don't get dates. Fat girls don't go out. Fat girls don't do anything. Fat girls are fat girls, and society tells fat girls that they are unworthy. And the only way that you're going to be anything in this world is to shrink, not only your size, but yourself,
Yeah,
so that
that's the
people will
danger, yeah.
accept you. And
Yeah.
that is what the book, the light just came on for me. The light just came on. It was literally therapy. So when I, and the funny thing is, Amy, is that I don't know if anybody's read the book. I know that there have been book sales, right?
Okay.
But nobody's come back to me and said, I read it, I get it. I haven't got a review. There's one review on Amazon, it's 5 stars, but it's just literally 5 stars, no words. So I don't know if that could be my sister. I'll be, who could be anybody, right? I don't know. But I would love to know if the things that happened to this character, if people could relate. I can remember going to the gym and hitting it hard, and then just feeling so just bad about myself for whatever reason, and then just going to the drive-in and just eating, just getting all
Yeah.
the bad stuff at the drive-in for whatever reason. I don't know. But I got very fanatical with my weight loss. And she does in the book where I am now putting myself literally in danger, not only my health, because I'm drinking everything. I'm not even eating real food anymore. We're drinking our meals. And I'm working out to the point where it's just not safe. And I'm going to take it to another level. I'm in a boxing workout. I am actually getting in the ring, and I'm going to Muay Thai box women who are maybe twice younger than me. So I'm 40, they're 20, and I'm going to get in the ring and I'm going to fight these women because I've got this weird fanatical thing about being thin and working out. And nobody told me that working out doesn't have to be fanatical. You can just
Right.
go walk for 30 minutes and be just as fine. And you know what I mean? But nobody
We do
told me.
have a culture of the I call it the 5 a.m. club. It's like the guy that gets up at 5 in the morning and does the 90-minute workout, the David Goggins of the, it's like we have a culture of like that's the only thing that works. And it's not you can do your workout at whatever time of day you want to do it. And walking, I like to reframe with people. If you went back 150 years in humanity, people were not joining gyms and doing workouts. Life by itself was so hard, and there was so much effort in a daily thing. You had to walk so many more places and lift everything and laundry, and everything was so much work that the concept of intentionally doing a workout for the just for the sake of working out would not have, I think, occurred to anybody. People did do recreation and games, but that was like, only a small amount of humanity had the time to do that. Like people were trying to stay alive. So, and now, everybody is, it's like 2,000 calories in an hour. It's like, all right, this, we may have taken a wrong turn somewhere in humanity. I can't say for sure, but it's definitely a thing. So, I don't always ask a question like this because I don't always think that there's like a reason to do it. But the reason I'm going to ask this question is not at all to evaluate the what you did, but if there's somebody who's listening, who's in a similar spot to you, who is going through a transformation journey, weight loss or something else, and they're thinking to themselves, I love this story, but I don't want to write a book. Do you think that writing the book was the only way that you personally could have confronted these deeper issues? Or now that you've gone all the way through, do you think there's another way that you could have made it through this journey?
Writing the book was just my therapy, but I think if I wasn't a writer, I probably would have really, I got really deep into my spirituality, right? I got
Okay.
really deep into meditation. I got really deep into the whole, I just went down an entire rabbit hole with this stuff because it resonated with me, right? And I honestly started listening to the voice in my head.
Okay, yeah.
By listening to it. And I found that the things that I were afraid of, there was really no reason for me to be afraid of them, right? But you don't know that until you do it.
Yeah.
And so for me, it would have probably taken a little longer, but I think I would have gotten there because for me, meditation, allowed me to sit with myself, right? And listen to myself. But then it also made me realize that, well, and during this time, during COVID, people found out if they even liked themselves or not,
Yes,
right? But
we
you're
did.
spending time with you. And it dawned on me that I actually do like me. I'm pretty cool. I'm a pretty cool chick to hang with. But it took me a minute to get that, right? And so once I started really listening to my voice, and but I also realized that on my spiritual journey, and I had read that once you start kind of making boundaries and telling people no or whatever, that people will start to fall away from your life, right? Because they probably shouldn't have been there in the begin with, you know? And I stopped letting people take advantage of me, because when you are desperate for validation, you will let people take advantage of you, because sometimes people think it's better, I'm better off being with somebody than being by myself,
But it
right?
feels like, yeah, it gets mixed up. Like it is attention. And so it can be hard to figure out if that's the attention that you want. And when you have that self-dialogue of maybe I haven't hit the mark, and so this is my fault. Sometimes we can be like, well, this is all there is for me. And so I should take it. And so I'm
Well,
glad
for
you
me,
made that connection.
it was just a lot of self-realization that happened over a period of time for me. But meditation really helped me, because I really started listening to me.
I think that's beautiful. I mean, that's what meditation is supposed to be for, allowing that space for that. The other thing you said that we got to know each other ourselves during lockdown. We also got to know the other people in our family, some of us, and whether or not we like them. It was a very unique time. It wasn't a great time for, I know two people who got divorced during lockdown because they were like, oh no, this is enough. I was like, so there were some things. All right. So you've talked a lot about the things that you were doing, Bright-Headed Publishing, all of those kind of things. In a second, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to talk about how you want people to connect with you after the interview.
So, the best way to connect with me would be my website, which is brightheadedpublishing.com, right? Or you can always email me at brightheadedpublishing@gmail.com. But the website that I have will kind of direct you to everything. So you can see the author's mic. You can get to my link tree. I have a link tree that links everything, because on the website, the first thing that pops up is there's a free guide. It's called So You Want to Write a Book. So I put together this guide, and it doesn't tell you how to write the book, but it tells you all the things that you should know if you're going to write a book. Like, you're going to need an ISBN number and where to go get that. And here's the platforms that you can put it on. And here's if you want to put it on other platforms, here's what not to do with Amazon. And if you're going to do an editor, here's what you're going to need to do. And just all of those things that nobody told me. It's free. You can just download it. It's your
That's
guide,
great.
And so that is just one way. Then I have like templates. Like, if you want to pitch a podcast, I have a template for that. If you want to pitch a book club, I have a template for that. These things are free, because I have found that this information is out there, but you may not know where to go to get it.
You might not know where to get it. There is a disconnect. You and I talked about this, I think, right before we started hitting record. We hit record. There's more information out in the world now than there ever has been before. And in theory, you can find it. But the reality that most people are experiencing is that if you don't know the right question to ask, you don't get the information you want. And so there is a gap. There's more information out there, but there's also more people saying, I don't know how to find this. I don't know where it's at. Just a disconnect, a mishmash. Everything is very tightly siloed. So if you don't know the right question to ask, you need somebody to bridge it. And so that's a beautiful thing. You have a special offer for the audience, which is a digital copy of the book. Wait for it. I love that this is the offer. And so this book sells for $9.99, but you've given us a link for a free copy. Of the ebook. And so there's a link in the show notes. The best way for everybody who's watching and listening to get these links is always to be subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then you get my newsletter and in there are the links and you just click on it and bing, bang, boom, all the great things. So I love that. All right. So, Kelly, I want to thank you for that very generous offer. And are you ready for the final questions?
I am ready. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. Would you share with me a food that you don't eat? You don't have to explain why, but just something that maybe other people eat and maybe even love, and you're just like, oh, nope, that's not for me.
Raisins. I can tell you that right now. Raisins.
I knew, I don't know why I'm laughing at that, but I did. I was very entertained when I wrote that question. So I love it. Raisins. All right. There you go. Very good. When you think back to your younger years, maybe middle school to high school, do you remember the name of an adult, any adult, who is influential in your life in a good way? It can be anybody, a teacher, a coach, a neighbor, somebody that was influential in a good way for you.
Oh my God, you know who I remember? I remember two teachers in high school. One is Mr. Kenneth Hopkins. And the reason why I remember Mr. Hopkins is because we were what, high school, 15, 16. This was his first job. He was like in his early 20s.
Oh, so he was close in age.
He would say, "I'm not that much older than you." And so calling him Mr., he's like, "You don't have to call me Mr." And I saw him years later. And you're right, he's not that much older, but he'll always be Mr. Hopkins. The other teacher that really did a lot for me, and he'll never know, was Mr. Rodriguez. And because I got kicked out of gym, and I needed a class, and so he allowed me, he just said, "You can just come be my aide, Kelly, and just
Okay.
aid." And so those two teachers were like, Mr. Hopkins was, he was a great teacher. I loved his class. I learned a lot from him. That's how I passed math, because I took him for accounting.
There you go.
And then Mr. Rodriguez like saved me and gave me a place when I didn't have none, when I got kicked out of gym.
Those are great stories. I love that. I love that. All right. So, last one. If you won a contest for a free, all expense paid, 2 week vacation, what would you want that to be? Would you want it to be something that's like an all-inclusive beach, tropical resort or cruise, a rustic sort of mountain getaway, or an urban location with a beautiful luxury hotel and culture and museums? What would your choice of vacation
Oh,
be?
no doubt in the world, it would be the beach.
There you go.
It would be the beach.
I love it. I love it. All right, that's it. Kelly Morgan, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you, Amy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.